Shalom and welcome to His Word Heals. This program is focused weekly on living in agreement with Yahweh's Word. Today we are going to take another look at the Noahide laws as they are being taught to the church, specifically through the Prophecy Watchers Conference and speaker teacher Dr. Ken Johnson. The link to the full video that we are going to use snippets from today is on our website at www.hiswordheals.com below the full video for this program entitled Noahides, Gentiles, and Jews. Is there a difference in Messiah Yeshua? If we are not Jews, should we be Noahides? Today's program is going to compare what Prophecy Watchers and Ken Johnson are teaching mainstream Christians with Yahweh's Word as found in both the Old and New Testaments. Previously, we've done a program video on what actual Noahide sites themselves are teaching, so we aren't going to go over that today, but you can watch that video called Noahide Laws, Ezekiel 11 and 21, Deal of the Century, and Jordan's King Abdullah on our website videos page as well. Let's get started with our first snippet from Dr. Ken Johnson at the Prophecy Watchers Conference from this past spring 2019.
It's always been wrong to murder, rape, steal, things like that, and it always will be wrong to steal from someone. So that's basic moral law. Our founding fathers said those are self-evident laws, and so that's good. And the way that it's always been taught is that Moses then receives the law for the children of Israel on Mount Sinai, and it is a law filled with ritual that teaches prophecy and other things. And then it's according to Paul out of Galatians, Ephesians, and Hebrews, talks about how when Messiah comes, that is set aside.
Let's read what Paul has to say about the law in Romans 3:29 through 31. Is he the God of the Jews only? Is he not also of the Gentiles? Yes, of the Gentiles also, seeing it is one God, which shall justify the circumcision by faith and uncircumcision through faith. Do we then make void the law through faith? God forbid. Yea, we establish the law. So which law is established according to Paul? Is it the Noahide laws, as Ken Johnson claims, or is it the law of Moses, which Ken Johnson says Paul said is now set aside? I think as we go along today, this answer will become clear.
Thing about the law, recently in the last decade, we have the Hebrew Roots movement that's come up. And in a sense, we're all Hebrew Roots people, right? We want to look at the scriptures, hopefully if we have time and have the capacity, learn some Hebrew to understand things better. And if you understand the rituals that they do on Yom Kippur and Passover actually teach prophecy, then yeah, I want to get that memorized, you know, and go back to the scriptures and try to figure things out. And so that's fine. But like always, we have people that take things out of context. And in the world of Christianity, we have cults. And there are Sabbatarian cults that say you can't eat pork, cannot eat pork. You must observe the Sabbath. You must do certain things. And in the Hebrew Roots movement, there's some people like that also. And they mean well. And the reason they mean well is because they actually think that the law, or the law of God, is the law of Moses, as given to Adam in the Garden of Eden. And somehow it was never paid attention to, and Adam, or Moses, kind of redid the whole thing.
Okay, so here I will let the word of Yahweh speak for itself. Hebrews 13:8. Jesus Christ, or Yeshua Messiah, is the same yesterday and today and forever. Malachi 3, for I am Yahweh, I change not, therefore ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. John 1:1-8. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. Continuing on in verse 14-17, and the Word was made flesh, and that's the Word that was in the beginning with God and was God. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him and cried, saying, this was he of whom I spoke. He that comes after me is preferred before me, and he was before me. And of his fullness have all we received, and grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ, or Yeshua Messiah. So Yahweh, or Elohim, or God, says that he does not change. Yeshua is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And Yeshua was the Word in the beginning with God and was God, and it has not changed. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Yeshua Messiah. So the law was given by Moses. It doesn't say the law was given to Noah. The law is contained in the Word of Yahweh, and the Word of Yahweh is Yeshua, the Word of Yahweh made flesh, and he was the same Yesterday, today, and forever, he was in the beginning with God, and he was God. But let's continue. We'll build on this verse by verse, precept by precept.
You get to chapter 8, it talks about Jewish-Gentile relations. And it'll talk about if you're a Gentile and they're a Jew and you have a problem, you're trying to sue each other, which court system to use, what precedents happen, those kind of things. And then it talks about the 7 Noahide laws, and we'll get into that in a minute. And that's really interesting because you can kind of see this concept. If God gave the law of Moses to Adam and said, this is the law that everybody has to follow, period, then obviously the law of Moses is still in effect. And so we need to be Sabbatarians. We need to eat kosher. We need to do all the Israeli things. And half of that stuff is impossible, of course, without a temple. But if, on the other hand, there were basic moral laws handed down to Adam, reinstituted by Noah for all nations, and one of those is that you can add to those laws, but you can't take away from basic moral law. That being the case, then, the extra laws were given to Moses for Israel for a time.
Leviticus 24, you shall have one manner of law, as well for the stranger as for one of your own country, for I am Yahweh your Elohim. Deuteronomy 29, keep therefore the words of this covenant and do them, that ye may prosper in all that you do. You stand here this day, all of you, before Yahweh your Elohim, your captains of your tribes, your elders and your officers, with all the men of Israel, your little ones, your wives, and the stranger that is in thy camp, from the hewer of the wood unto the drawer of the water, that thou should enter into the covenant with Yahweh thy Elohim, and into his oath, which Yahweh thy Elohim maketh with you this day, that he may establish you today for a people unto himself, and that he may be unto you an Elohim, as he has said unto you, and as he has sworn unto your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Neither with you only do I make this covenant and this oath, but with him that stands here with us this day before Yahweh our Elohim, and also with him that is not here with us this day.
So let's look at a few of these things just to see Gentile and Jewish relations. And this is interesting because, again, how does that work together? Even in the first century church, what happens when these guys are Gentiles and these guys are Jewish and we fellowship and you eat kosher and they don't and all that stuff is fine? What happens when one of you guys want to marry one of these guys? Oh, man, how do we do that? You know, and so you live like a Gentile? Do you live like a Jew? Is it half and half? How do you go about doing that? Those are some of the problems we find in the book of Acts and in other places.
Deuteronomy 7, verses 3 and 4. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, and they may serve other gods. So will the anger of Yahweh be kindled against you, and destroy thee suddenly. 2 Corinthians 6:14. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion hath light with darkness? So then, that probably would not have been a problem that needed to be worked out. What are we going to do here? What are we going to do there in Acts? Because Paul instructed in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14, not to be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. At that time, that, of course, would have been unbelievers in Yeshua Messiah. And in the Old Testament, when they were heading into the land, he also told them not to marry the unbelievers of the land, the idolaters, the pagans of the land. So there wouldn't have been the problem of, do we eat kosher? Do we not eat kosher? Do we do this law? Do we do that law? One law for you and the stranger among you, and certainly one law for families. You either abided by the law of Moses, or you did not marry into the children of Israel. Period. Or at least that's the way it was supposed to be.
Well, first, let's take a look at, just as an example, Gentile food. And here is a quote from chapter 8, section 1. It says this: when the Israelite troops enter Gentile territory to conquer and to take prisoners, if they become hungry and can only find the forbidden food, they are permitted to eat unproperly slaughtered animals, animals that died of themselves, and the flesh of pigs and other unclean animals. So, in other words, this is the kind of thing, it actually says this in Leviticus if you think about it. You don't eat roadkill. Because if you do, you're liable to get some disease and die. You just don't do it. But what happens when you're out in the wilderness and there's no food and you're starving and you find something? You either die or you take a chance and maybe die, maybe live. So it's that kind of a thing is what they're talking about here. So we go to war. We run out of provisions, or the Jews run out of provisions. There's a lot of food there, but it's technically forbidden food. It goes on and says, likewise, they may drink of wine that was used for idol worship. They're not worshiping idols, but the wine is just sitting there. And you don't want to necessarily drink the water in some wells. This license is derived from the oral tradition, which interprets the good things of Deuteronomy 6:10 as pig necks and the like.
Leviticus 11:7 and 8, and the swine, though he divide the hoof and be cloven-footed, yet he choose not the cud. He is unclean to you. Of their flesh shall ye not eat, and their carcass ye shall not touch. They are unclean to you. Isaiah 65:3-4, a people that provokes me to anger continually to my face, that sacrifice in gardens and burneth incense upon altars of brick, which remain among the graves and lodge in the monuments, which eat swine's flesh and the broth of abominable things in it in their vessels. Isaiah 66:17, they that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the gardens behind one tree in the midst, eating swine's flesh and the abomination and the mouse, shall be consumed together, saith Yahweh. Does this sound like Yahweh would be calling anything related to eating swine a good thing?
So it's interesting. Eating pork doesn't kill you, unless, of course, it's not cooked properly. Everything has to be cooked properly. But this is an interesting thing, talking to us about food laws and kosher laws. We see the same thing in the scriptures. Let's look at that. Here is Deuteronomy 14:21, and it says, you will not eat of anything that dies of itself. We're talking to Jews when they enter the land of Israel, okay? And that's understandable. And dying of itself simply means it's not kosher. Remember, the patriarchs used to hunt deer and things like that. Deer is actually a clean animal. But if I shoot it with a bow and arrow, and by the time I get there to field dress it, it's already dead. It was not slaughtered properly, therefore it is unkosher.
Deuteronomy 12:21-23. If the place which Yahweh thy Elohim has chosen to put his name there be too far from thee, then thou shalt kill of thy herd and of thy flock, which Yahweh has given thee, as I have commanded thee, and thou shalt eat in thy gates whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, even as the roebuck and the hart is eaten, so thou shalt eat them. The unclean and the clean shall eat of them alike. Only be sure that thou eat not of the blood, for the blood is in the life, and thou mayest not eat the life with the flesh. So this says that if the place to slaughter animals to Yahweh as an offering is too far, Jerusalem is too far, then they could go ahead and eat meat anyway, that they can slaughter themselves at home. It's not an offering. It's not a sacrifice. They're slaughtering it at home, and they can eat of it just as if they would eat the roebuck or the hart, which are both wild game animals. And so he's comparing eating of your own livestock as eating wild game. So it's obvious that they were allowed to eat wild game. It just says not to eat with the blood in the flesh. So in order to get wild game, you obviously cannot slaughter the same way they do the sacrifices at the altar in Jerusalem by slitting their throat. You'd have to be a pretty good hunter to sneak up behind one and slit its throat. You're just not supposed to make a meal out of the blood. You're supposed to drain as much blood out of it as you can. Don't drink the blood. Don't cook the blood into a meal like some people do down south, I think, or used to do. They made blood pie or something. But you could obviously go hunting and kill an animal and drain its blood out as quick as possible and prepare it properly, and it would still be clean for you if it had chewed the cud and had a cloven hoof. I think he's confusing Talmudic law with biblical law here. He's inserting a lot of the Talmudic law, which is what Yeshua actually preached against, was the extra Talmudic laws that were added in and made above the scriptures.
So you cannot eat anything that dies of itself, but you can give it to a stranger, which the word is gar, that is in your gates, and he may eat it. Or you can sell it to an alien, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. You shall not see the kid in its mother's milk. So we're talking about what Jews and Gentiles do. Now this is an amazing scripture because, number one, it says, let me define these for you. An alien is somebody that you don't know who they are exactly. A ger is translated stranger here, is basically a brother Gentile.
Now here he's making a big stretch, saying that a stranger is a Gentile brother. The first place we see a stranger, or ger, in the scriptures is Genesis 15:13, and it says, "And he said unto Abraham, Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. So the Israelites were called strangers in Egypt, or Ger in Egypt. That is not a Gentile brother. Ger is H1616. From H1481, properly a guest, by implication a foreigner, alien, sojourner, stranger. So let's look up H1481, that ger, the primitive root, properly to turn aside from the road for lodging or any other purpose, to sojourn as a guest. So a stranger is a person that's just coming into your land to visit. They're coming there to live temporarily. They're trying to get away from their land. Maybe they want to live there for a while and see your culture. Perhaps they liked the culture that the Israelites, they liked the laws. They wanted to learn more about the Israelite God. These are the people that are the ger. They are there to learn, and you're supposed to be a good example to them. They are lumped right in with the widows and the orphans and the people that the Israelites were supposed to take care of and save, give tithes to, and all of that. They were supposed to take care of those visiting. They're visitors. They're not necessarily Gentile brothers, and I think that's very much a stretch, and he needs that stretch in order to prove his Noahide law theory.
The way that it works, it's almost like a caste system. The lowest on the rank is called an achim, and that is an idolater. And if an Israeli finds that you have an idol in your pocket, he drags you to a court, they pronounce sentence, and you're executed very quickly. That is not acceptable. You want to do idols, you take it to some other country, not in the land of Israel. So that's the lowest of the low. If you're an achim, get out or die.
We as Christians or Hebrew roots or first century believers or messianic believers or whatever we want to call ourselves, we do believe in only one God. But we believe that the one and only God, Yahweh, has a son who came in the flesh, his word made flesh, Yahweh's word made flesh, to live among us and show us how to live his laws righteously. Under the Noahide laws, according to law number one, which says, do not profane God's oneness in any way, and this comes from Kabbat.org, acknowledge that there's a single God who cares about what we are doing and desires that we take care of his world. Sounds simple enough. We would feel that we fit in that category. Unfortunately, according to the Talmud, God does not have a son. God did not manifest himself in the flesh as Yeshua or Jesus or anyone, and that is considered idolatry. And the penalty would be the death penalty, as he said goes for these idolaters, which is true, but we don't believe we're idolaters. They do believe we're idolaters. We're not ger Gentile brothers if we believe in Yeshua as our Messiah.
So the next step, though, is what we call a ger, who is a Noahide. Okay, and this is someone that said, hey, I recognize that there's only one God, and I recognize, according to the prophecies from Noah on down, you know, my history, that we're awaiting a Messiah, and it's coming through Israel. And I'm not Jewish, have no wish to be Jewish, but we're waiting for the prophets to tell us more about the Messiah. We're waiting for the Messiah. And I will not murder, and I will not fornicate, and I will not steal. And I will submit to the laws of the country I'm in, which happens to be Israel. So you're my brother. We both have eternal life. You know, we're awaiting Messiah. You know how brothers are. They pick on each other. We're brothers, you know. I will go over there and eat my bacon, so I'm not going to bother you, but that's what I do. We're brothers. Deal with it. But I have your back, okay? I'm a Toshev. I'm a Ger Toshev.
I just really don't know even what to say about that beyond what I've already said. I don't find that anywhere in the scriptures. Other than, as Proverbs 14:12 and 16:25 say, there is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death.
The next on the list then is a Gerizetic, somebody who begins to take some of the Israeli laws and follow them. Maybe they want to observe a Sabbath or eat kosher or do certain rituals or whatever under the authority of the Israeli government. And then you have a proselyte, someone who converts to Judaism. And then, of course, there's a native-born Israeli.
At least twice in the New Testament, we're told there is no difference between the Jew or the Greek now, not in Yeshua Messiah. Galatians 3:28, there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither bond nor free, there is neither male nor female, for ye are all one in Yeshua Messiah. Colossians 3:11, where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Yeshua Messiah is all and in all. Dr. Ken Johnson here is basically claiming that a ger in the Old Testament is the same as a believing Gentile and also a modern believing Gentile Christian. However, that is very contrary to both the Old and New Testaments. In Romans chapter 11, we see where Paul explains the grafting in of the Gentiles into the tree of Israel. There is neither Jew nor Greek, Israel nor Gentile. Once a Gentile believes in Yeshua Messiah, he is reborn into the kingdom of Yahweh, into the tree of Israel, and is no longer a Gentile. These Noahides are seeking to keep Gentile believers separate from the tree of Israel, saying that we are ger, or believing brothers, that can go ahead and not obey all of the laws of Israel that were given to Israel. We can eat what we want as long as we follow these 7 laws given to Noah. That is not something that is taught anywhere in actual scripture and is contrary to both the Old and New Testament teachings, including the teachings of Paul that Mr. Johnson is citing. Indeed, here is what Paul actually taught. Ephesians 2:11-19. Wherefore remember that ye being in times past Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcised by that which is called the circumcision in the flesh made by hands, that at that time ye were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers from the covenant of the promise, having no hope and without God in the world. So this Paul explains what a stranger and an alien were considered in the Old Testament, and it's not what Mr. Johnson says they were. They were not believing brothers, strangers and aliens from the covenant of promise, had no hope and were without Elohim in the world. But now in Messiah Yeshua, you who sometimes were afar off are made nigh or close by the blood of Messiah. For he is our peace, who hath made both one, and hath broken down the middle wall of partition between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances, for to make in himself of 2 one new man, making peace. And these are the ordinances of the Talmud. These are the things that Yeshua did do away with, the separation that was caused by the Talmud, the things that Mr. Johnson are teaching here to try and keep so-called believing Noahides separate from the tree of Israel, and that he might reconcile both unto God in one body, that's both Jew and Gentile, by the cross, having slain the enmity or division thereby, and came and preached peace to you which were afar off and to them that were near. For through him we both have access by one Spirit unto the Father. Now therefore ye are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of Elohim. So through Yeshua we are no longer ger, or quote-unquote believing brothers, which are actually visitors to the land of Israel. We are no longer visitors. We are no longer strangers. We are no longer foreigners, but we are made one with the body of Messiah, one in the tree of Israel, which means there is one law for us, just as there was one law for the Israelites and the strangers among them. There is no Noahide law for the Gentile believers and a Moses law for Jewish believers. In conclusion of part 2, looking at the Noahide laws, in my opinion, it is the equivalent of those Jewish believers that troubled the new believers to become proselytized in order to be part of Israel, in order to be part of the Jews. They had to do it according to Talmudic law to be converted as a Jew before they could be considered anything other than a stranger or an alien. The Noahide laws are turning back the clock and telling Christians that we need to follow these Noahide laws. We don't need to follow the law of Moses, the covenant of Moses. Those promises, those blessings, those things such as the Shabbats and the feasts are not for us. It doesn't matter what we eat. We can eat whatever we want, and we're still considered ger, or believing Gentiles. But that's not what the scriptures say. That's not what Paul taught. All of his promises and blessings are for us, as well as all of his rules are for us too, to keep order in his kingdom, to keep order in his house, to teach us how to love him and how to love each other. And in the end, according to Talmudic law, potentially if you believe in Yeshua as Messiah, in Yeshua as the Son of Yahweh, Yahweh's word made flesh, then you are an idolater according to the Noahide laws, and the penalty for breaking the Noahide laws is death. Again, please go to our website, www.hiswordheals.com, and watch the Noahide Laws Part 1 video there. Blessings and shalom to all of you and everyone in your homes.